Hello and welcome to the podcast of the Royal New Zealand College of Urgent Care. My name is Guy Melrose. This week, given current events here in New Zealand, I did not feel like producing an educational podcast. In trying to come up with something to talk about, it occurred to me that in August last year, I recorded the reflective musings relating to some audio ramblings I'd made 1 year previously, in 2019, as I enjoyed a walk around the historic medical buildings of Edinburgh. As I re-listened to that podcast today, it felt like something that was worth resharing. Thinking about how we got from the medicine of the late 1800s to what we now consider modern medicine puts our current struggles to contain a virus into perspective. 1 year ago, this gave me hope that we would come out the other side, stronger and with modern medicine advanced further down the continuum. And 1 year later, this is true. While we have not yet won, the medical marvel that was the development of the vaccines and the effect they have had in reducing death and serious illness is exactly the way medicine has worked over the course of history. Learn, adapt, and overcome. Always learning, always improving. We know what works, we know how to control this virus, and we know that the vaccine works. So 1 year later, I'm still 14,000 miles from my family home, unable to visit friends and family, but we're a little further down that path that medicine has been shepherding humans since Hippocrates. Sure, I was happier this time last week, but we all knew New Zealand could not get away with avoiding this virus forever. But once again, we've acted swiftly, and with luck, we will get things under control, get our population vaccinated, and I'll get to see my family again soon. But until then, let's spend 40 minutes travelling back to 2019, to what feels like a different world, and let's revisit my medical mystery tour of Edinburgh. It is currently late August 2020, and the world has been straining under the burden of a global pandemic that has led to the closure of borders and international travel has all but dried up. Whilst the lockdown of citizens within their houses, in an effort to contain and control the further spread of a deadly disease, has eased in parts of the world, the possibility of a return to a lockdown situation remains ever present. So it is within this current world that I find myself looking wistfully back to July of 2019. I travelled back to the UK to visit my family. Whilst there, I had a morning to kill in Edinburgh, so I embarked on a 3 mile walk around the centre of this beautiful city, looking at historical medical institutions and buildings that house some of the pioneers of modern medicine. I recorded my thoughts as I went around, and have been sitting on the footage ever since, trying to find an angle or an inspiration to form them into a podcast. So it is in the midst of a global pandemic, 14,000 miles away from home, at a time I had planned to visit my family to celebrate my father's 80th birthday, that I find myself reflecting on my little walk around Edinburgh, and I realise that so much of what I experienced that day formed medicine as we know it, and that our fight against a global disease today is built on the history of our forever evolving specialty of medicine. Whilst we exist at the current pinnacle of medical advances, so too were the greatest scientific minds of the 1800s. We are all on the same spectrum, we just have the benefit of being a bit further along, and possess all that knowledge laid down before. So I find myself now, more than ever before, thinking about the history of medicine and how we are standing on the shoulders of giants. My name is Guy Melrose, and now seems a good time for us to take a little medical mystery tour of Edinburgh. Thank you. I was born and raised in England, but I consider myself British. When it comes to rugby, I'm English through and through, but as my surname and ginger hair will attest, I have a significant amount of Scottish blood in me, so I have always felt at home north of the border. But my medical tour of Edinburgh actually starts with a nod to my adopted home down under, with a flat white at a fine little coffee shop where York Place becomes Queen Street. Okay, so the plan is to take a little 3-mile tour of Edinburgh, taking in some of the sites relating to medicine. There's a lot of history around this place, and we start just outside the Scottish National Portrait Gallery on Queen Street, and not far away from the Royal College of Physicians of Edinburgh. So we'll be passing that and heading down towards our first port of call. For those of you that ever do this, we started on the corner of York Place and Queen Street with a coffee at Fortitude, which was an outstanding flat white, the most Kiwi flat white I've had in the UK, so a good place to start your medical tour. But, yeah, it's a cold morning, despite being July in the UK, but for Scotland this is probably quite warm. So the tour I am following is outlined on a page on the Royal College of Physicians of Edinburgh's website. It has a map with the waypoints, and there is audio for each spot recorded by retired geriatric physician Dr. Roger Smith. I have linked to this in the show notes. Modern technology allows you to not only follow this route on Google Maps, but listen to the commentary and cross-reference other sources, all enriching your experience as you go. Much of what I learned, and relayed as I went, was sourced from various historical articles online, the Royal College of Physicians of Edinburgh page, and good old Wikipedia. But there are also plaques dotted around the place, and one of my final stops on the tour provides an overwhelming amount of information. But more on that later. So with an iPhone in one hand, and a podcast recorder in the other, and a belly fueled with flat white, my wife and I set off down the road to our first destination, number 52, Queen Street. So a little stroll down Queen Street already starts to feel very medical. It's a bustling, busy street, and on the way we pass the Royal College of Physicians of Edinburgh, a very imposing building. And we pass the BMA building and the Royal College of General Practitioners of Scotland. So a very medical feel to this place, very austere old stone buildings with a lovely park opposite and views down towards the Firth of Forth. But then we find ourselves at a little building that has a carved stone on the wall to the name of Sir James Young Simpson, who lived in this house from 1845 to 1870. And he's relevant to particularly obstetrics. He was an obstetrician and a pioneer of forceps deliveries, but he was also an advocate for midwives. But where he probably helps urgent care in a slightly tangential way is that he discovered the use of chloroform, and so was really a pioneer of anesthesia and the effects that gases can have on the body to enable analgesia and procedures to be carried out. So without his work in chloroform, we wouldn't have had modern day anesthetics, and then obviously we wouldn't have Entonox, our go-to gas of choice in urgent care. But a fairly decent sized building, so obstetricians back in the day obviously earned a fair penny, but now a very busy Edinburgh street, and quite a medical street at that. Were it not for the noisy traffic, it would be easy to imagine the physicians of the mid-1800s inhabiting these buildings on Queen Street, for very little seems to have changed. But this is a feature of any walking tour around such an historic city as Edinburgh. The juxtaposition of old and new exists in all cities as layers of history are built, but Edinburgh certainly maintains much of its historic centre. Had this not been an unplanned whistle-stop tour, we would have arranged accommodation within the Royal College of Physicians of Edinburgh, a benefit afforded to my wife, who is a member of the college. It would have been nice to languish in medical history, but we are on a tight schedule, so we press on down Queen Street towards Charlotte Square. So a little further down Queen Street, we've come across a little square, a very pretty square, called Charlotte Square, and it's quite busy. There's a lot of seemingly tourist-looking vehicles coming round, buses and the like, and I think that's because the First Minister of Scotland has their official residence here. However, I'm interested in a building that was the residence of a British surgeon by the name of Joseph Lister, who was later Lord Lister, and he was famous for the work he did on pioneering antiseptic techniques for sterilising surgical equipment. He came up with the use of a carbolic steam spray to sterilise surgical equipment, and through doing this had a huge reduction in post-operative infections, which led many people to call him the father of modern surgery. And certainly without his work, modern surgery would not have progressed at the rate it did following his work on sterilization. So a very important person in the world of medicine, and he lived in a very beautiful house overlooking a very beautiful square, and they're keeping it very clean with a very noisy road sweeper. So it's time to move on. It is fascinating to think of surgery at the time before Lister. Surgeons would not wash hands or clean wounds, instead believing that infections were spread via miasma, a form of bad air. As such, wards were aired daily to remove this from the building, all the while unwashed hands were digging around in wounds. It is easy to roll our eyes now, particularly when we know how effective good hand washing is when dealing with a global pandemic. But science is an evolving subject. We practice the best evidence of our time until such time as better evidence emerges, and it was no different then. Inspired by the work of Louis Pasteur, Lister formed some theories, tested them, and found a reduction in post-operative infections. While he was initially criticised by some of his peers, his hand washing and surgical glove requirements and the cleaning of instruments formed the basis of modern surgery, leading to him often being referred to as the father of modern surgery. One thing I did not realise until now is that the mouthwash Listerine is named after Lister. And this was not a modern marketing ploy. Listerine was founded in 1879 by Missouri chemist Joseph Lawrence and was named in honour of Lister. And another thing I've learned since this tour is that Dave Lister, the third-class technician on the space mining vessel Red Dwarf, is not related to Joseph Lister, although he has once made that claim falsely in order to gain access to a nightclub. Whether advancements in medical techniques and therapies come about via progressive development of theories, backed up by testing, or the more accidental discoveries like that of penicillin by another famous Scottish physician, Sir Alexander Fleming, it is a feature of medicine that we are always learning and prepared to take on new ideas and new evidence-based practices. And our next stop takes us to another fine example, one that feels all the more close to home during a global pandemic. So still on Charlotte Square, we have the house of Sir Robert Philip. Sir Robert Philip is a pioneer in the crusade against tuberculosis. He was an Edinburgh physician, and he was one of the fundamental
pioneers in the treatment of tuberculosis. And he lived here between 1898 and 1938. Robert Philip actually qualified in medicine in 1882, which was the same year that the tuberculosis bacillus was identified. And in 1887, he founded and opened the first TB dispensary clinic in Edinburgh, and really paved the way for treatment of tuberculosis throughout Scotland and then Great Britain. He opened a clinic down in Paddington in London when he was recognised in 1912 for his integrated approach to tuberculosis treatment. So the government got him down into London, and in 1917 he became the chair of tuberculosis for the University of Edinburgh. He also went on to be the president of the Royal College of Physicians and the BMA. So he lived in a house just across the way from Robert Lister, and without his tireless work, the early treatment of tuberculosis would not have occurred.
If you look at the history of Charlotte Square, you will see it has been home to many influential Edinburgh residents over the years. Others relevant to medicine include James Syme, who was a Scottish surgeon in the 1800s, whose push for medical reform was one of the main influences in the passing of the Medical Reform Act in 1858, out of which the General Medical Council was formed. And Sir Patrick Heron-Watson also resided in Charlotte Square. An eminent surgeon, he pioneered a number of surgical techniques, but interestingly, despite being a contemporary, he was opposed to Joseph Lister's antiseptic techniques. He held the Chair of Clinical Surgery at Edinburgh University and was an honorary surgeon to Queen Victoria and King Edward VII, and was a great advocate for women training in medicine. He was also one of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's teachers and was considered the inspiration for Dr. Watson. Anyway, a short walk from Charlotte Square brings you to Princes Street. This is the main shopping street in Edinburgh, and is a beautiful, bustling hive of activity. It overlooks the Princes Street Gardens and has wonderful views of Edinburgh Castle. It is also the site of a huge Hogmanay party on New Year's Eve each year. I spent New Year's Eve of 1996 to 1997 here with approximately 400,000 other people in what the Guinness World Records have down as the largest ever New Year's Eve party. It certainly was an incredible experience to be there that night. But what's of interest to me in 2020 is the paper that was written in the Journal of Accident and Emergency Medicine that looked into ED presentations from midnight on the 31st to midnight of the 2nd of January. The paper reports 1,151 presentations in that period, with over half of these presenting during the New Year 24-hour period. There were 8 cardiac arrests, 4 acute MI, 3 convulsions, 1 anaphylaxis, 2 subarachnoid hemorrhages, and 1 GI hemorrhage. 43 had glass wounds, 41 were spiked by railings, and anyone familiar with the streets of Edinburgh will know all about railings, and 34 had trampling injuries. 714 patients had x-rays, but interestingly, only 20 had to have fractures manipulated. No deaths were attributable to the event, but the paper does say that the numbers greatly exceeded that which would warrant a major disaster response. I'll link in the show notes to the paper if you want to have a read. Interestingly, the Hogmanay event went to becoming an all-ticketed event after this year, limiting numbers to 100,000. Thinking back, I remember a friendly, if very crowded event, with no problems that I witnessed, but I can only imagine what the heart-sink feeling was if you were rostered on duty for New Year's Eve that year. Anyway, my route takes me off Princes Street and around the gardens.
So just round the corner from Charlotte Square, where we were, you cross Princes Street, a very busy central Edinburgh street, and there is a dip, a hollow, and there, within that hollow, there is a graveyard, and the it's quite a nice little place just to duck away from the noise of Edinburgh traffic. You can see the castle up on the hill, and as all graveyards are, can be quite a thought-provoking place. But the reason I've ducked into this one is that there is a small two-story tower built in the corner, which is a watchtower. And you might wonder, why do you need a watchtower in a graveyard? The residents of the graveyard are not likely to go anywhere, or at least you'd think. Back in 1826, anatomy became a compulsory part of the medical curriculum. And with that, the medical students of Edinburgh required specimens with which to learn anatomy. And so a trade, quite a lucrative trade in bodies, became the norm. And grave robbing was a real problem. And bodies would be buried, and overnight, apparently in less than an hour, if you're an efficient grave robber, you were able to dig up a freshly buried body, replace the evidence, and sell the body that night to the anatomy school. And so the families of those people being buried in this graveyard built a watchtower so that overnight people could be their graves could be watched, so the recently buried were not being stolen to sell to the anatomy school. Now, all of us who have been through medical school know that we benefit greatly nowadays from the bequeathing of bodies to medical science by people, but it's quite chilling to think that back in the day, in order to learn medicine, you were probably learning on bodies that were being stolen and sold on a black market without the consent. So seeing a little tower here in the centre of Edinburgh watching over the graves is highlights a slightly less salubrious time in medical education. And our next stop on our tour is going to highlight that still further. So we've come now behind the Edinburgh Castle and find ourselves in Grassmarket, which is an area where there's a number of pubs, which is popular with the nightlife of Edinburgh. But the pub we're interested in is called the White Hart Pub, which has been here since 1516 and has an interesting history, and not least because hangings used to take place just around the corner. So this was a popular place for people to come and assemble around hanging time. However, the reason we're here is that there were two very famous patrons of this pub back in the early 1820s, and they went by the name of Burke and Hare. And some of you may be familiar with this from a recent film which featured Andy Serkis and Simon Pegg. And Burke and Hare were two body snatchers, and we talked before about the grave robbers who would steal freshly buried bodies to sell to the anatomists. And there was a particular anatomist at Edinburgh Medical School, Dr. Knox, who was part of this whole racket. Interestingly, from a point of view of how did people legitimately get bodies for anatomy, they came from prisoners and from people who were executed or died in prison. That was the legal way of doing it. But to circumvent that, people went to grave robbing. And I guess the next logical step that Burke and Hare took were to think, well, if people aren't yet dead, well, why don't we kill them? And we can then sell their bodies to the doctor Robert Knox. So that's what they did. And so there was a series of 16 murders in 1828 over 10 months that were committed by William Burke and William Hare, and then sold those bodies on to Robert Knox for dissection and anatomy teaching. So the shortage of body snatching from the graves, probably because of the watchtowers that we saw earlier, led to two fellas getting very ingenious, becoming murderers. But another example of the slightly seedy nature in which anatomy was being taught back in the 1820s. But there was a positive to this. The murders did raise public awareness of the need for bodies for medical research, and so it did help in the passing of the Anatomy Act of 1832, that freed up the ability for donating of bodies, and also helped curb the trade of illegal body corpse trading. So Burke and Hare, I guess, was the sensationalist story that led to legislative change, which then led to the situation we're in now, where we learn from bodies which have been donated by people willingly, in the full knowledge that they are helping us to learn and move medicine forwards. So a grisly story, but with, I guess, a positive outcome. It's only 9:30 here in the morning, so the White Hart Inn is closed, and so we can't go in and have a beer, but we will carry on the next leg of our tour. So if you're doing this tour, as you continue up the grass market, you'll pass a little memorial for where they used to do the public hangings. You can just take a left, and it's worth going up this little street called West Bow. And the reason for that is, if you're a Harry Potter fan, it's the inspiration for Diagon Alley. For those of you that know Harry Potter, you'll know that J.K. Rowling wrote the book here in Edinburgh, and a lot of Edinburgh inspired her creation. So wandering around here feels very like wandering around Hogwarts. There is a cafe near here where she did all the writing. We'll be passing that later, but this little curving alley has a Harry Potter shop on, which is quite cool. Little cafes and shops, and you can definitely get the vibe for Diagon Alley. So if you're doing the medical tour, you can just duck up here and get a little bit of Harry Potter, if that is your thing. So a little walk down under a couple of lovely old bridges, and you find yourself in a place called Robertson's Close, which is the site of Edinburgh's first infirmary, built back in 1729. Apparently back then it had 6 beds and was staffed by 1 physician and 1 surgeon. The first patient was a young lady suffering with anemia. Apparently nothing remains of the original infirmary except the charity box that was used to fund it. I don't know where that is, but we'll keep looking. So according to my sources, which is Wikipedia in this case, the first patient, a lady from Caithness suffering with chlorosis, was discharged, recovered after 3 months. 35 patients were admitted in the first year, of whom 19 were cured, 5 recovered, and 5 dismissed either as incurable or for irregularities, and 1 who died in the hospital of consumption. People apparently came from all over Scotland here, but they were mainly Edinburgh residents. And diseases that were cured included pains, inflammations, agues, ulcers, cancers, palsies, flux, consumption, hysteric disorders, and melancholy. There was also a free advice medicine service for outpatients, and this was very popular, receiving 1,000 patients in by 1754.
When you consider that one emergency department in 1997 saw 1,100 patients in just a couple of days, it shows how Edinburgh has grown and the provision of healthcare has grown with it, when you see how small the early infirmaries really were. And of course the therapeutics now differ greatly too. I find it interesting that the first admitted patient to this infirmary was a lady with chlorosis, or hypochromic microcytic iron deficient anemia, and she spent 3 months being treated as an inpatient. But one thing you realise, tracing the footsteps of early medical pioneers, is that everything has to start somewhere. People were constantly looking to improve the delivery of healthcare, and whilst it might seem primitive to our current standards or facilities, these physicians were at the vanguard of medicine, and without their efforts, we would not be where we are today. And my next stop demonstrates a significant progression in medicine.
And just around the corner from those early infirmaries, we come across the Surgeons Hall Museums. And this is now a museum of surgery and dental surgery as well. But there's a little plaque on the wall here, the Edinburgh Seven, Britain's first female medical students, 1869 to 1873. And it's commemorating the Surgeons Hall riot, which occurred here on the 18th of November, 1870.
So the riots began on the 18th of November 1870 when 7 female medical students attended the Surgeons' Hall to sit an anatomy exam, whereby they were met by a mob of protesters who were adamant that women should not be doctors. With the help of many good people, and despite a torrent of verbal abuse and being pelted with rubbish, and also having a live sheep let loose in the exam room, the women managed to sit the exam. This event, coupled with a libel suit against one of the women who had named the alleged ringleader, led to a groundswell of support for women studying medicine. The Edinburgh Seven became the first group of matriculated female students at any British university, and whilst they were not able to practice medicine, they were pivotal in the UK Medical Act of 1876, which put into law the right of women to study medicine. In 2015, the plaque that I read from was put up, and in 2019, all 7 women were posthumously awarded their MBCHB. Now, the Surgeon Hall riots occurred, you guessed it, right outside the Surgeon's Hall. This building is now the Surgeon's Hall Museum.
Not far from the sites of the first infirmary and just a little bit down the road from where the official tour takes you is the Surgeons Hall Museums, and this makes a nice stop on a medical tour of Edinburgh, because not only does it help augment some of the things that we've just seen, from a historical point of view, there's exhibitions on Lister and Simpson and a real feel for the history of Edinburgh's medical community. But there's also a dental collection, a pathology section, and it's a fascinating place to wander around and see how medicine has evolved, particularly surgery. There's all the different tools and implements that have been used from the early days through to the modern era of medicine. There's a fascinating bit on surgical knots and how in the past that surgeons have used everything from biting ants and acacia thorns to close wounds. There's a really interesting bit on things that people have swallowed, ingested objects that kids have swallowed. The pathology exhibits are fascinating because it shows illnesses that we thankfully no longer see or were able to treat much earlier. There's paintings of people suffering with tetany, there's all kinds of sarcomas, and there's tuberculosis of every single bit of the human body that you could imagine getting TB. The skeletons of people suffering with scoliosis is a thing to see. So if you're sitting any exams, surgical exams or membership exams, it would be a good place to come and learn. But just from a purely medical point of view, wandering around and seeing what our forefathers and forebearers did in the world of medicine that enables us to practice medicine in the way that we do now is very makes you very appreciative of the conditions they had to work in and how medicine is an evolving specialty, and we each stand on each other's shoulders and move things forward. So if you are in Edinburgh, have a wander around. It's £7.50 to get in, and you could spend a very long time in there if you read everything that's there. One very interesting thing I found was the corner on Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who was a medical student here in Edinburgh, and it talks about the teacher that he had that was his inspiration for Sherlock Holmes, and it talks about how he came to identify a scientific mind that could be applied to crime solving through sitting in his lectures and watching this chap. So our mind will always wander when we're bored in a lecture, and maybe one of us will go on to write the next Sherlock Holmes. But check it out. It's called the Surgeons Hall Museums, and it's around the back of where the old infirmary used to be, and if you are medically trained and medically orientated, it's definitely worth an hour or two and £7.50.
You leave the Surgeons Hall Museum with a real feeling that you've been back studying medicine in the 1800s. You've watched a mock anatomy lecture in an old lecture theatre, and you've seen all these old implements and specimens. And as we walk back to the centre of town towards the Royal Mile, you pass current-day university buildings, and you pass the cafe where J.K. Rowling dreamt up Harry Potter, and you see the historic skyline of Edinburgh. You pass the National Museum of Scotland and the National Library. You see the St. Giles Cathedral and stumble across little gems like the Writers' Museum. You stop outside a pub called Deacon Brodie's, still too early to drink, but you read about the respectable cabinet maker and deacon of the Trades Guild and Edinburgh City Councillor, who in the late 1700s moonlighted as a thief at night to fund his gambling habit. He now has a pub named after him, but apparently Robert Louis Stevenson was so taken by the story of dual personality that he used it as inspiration for his book, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Around every corner is another story, another bit of history, and as we made our way back down to the railway station, one last plaque caught my eye, which neatly rounded off our little medical mystery tour.
Now, just off the Royal Mile, there is a street called Bank Street, and on that the corner of that street, there now sits a really good mash bar where you can get haggis and mashed potatoes and a really good vegetarian haggis as well. But it's housed in a building that has a plaque on it commemorating Sir Robert Philip, who we met earlier in the tour. He is the physician who led the world in establishing tuberculosis treatment and management, and it's in this building that's now a mash bar that he set up his first dispensary, and there's a sign carved into the wall, "The Destitute Sick." So it was his tuberculosis clinic and dispensary that was the first to lead the charge at eradicating TB, but it's now a very good mash bar, which I would recommend anybody who's feeling a bit tired and weary after a long walk around this quite hilly city to stop in at the Gourmet Mash Bar Company. So if you find yourself in Edinburgh for a day and want to have a little look at some of the medical history that's helped to inform our future practice, I would highly recommend popping to the Royal College of Physicians website, key in historical medical walk, and just follow. There's an audio version you can follow as well, and it certainly makes you realize the history of medicine, how deep it goes, and how lucky we are to be practicing medicine at this time of history.
And what I see now, listening back to my tour and reflecting on what I've learnt, is the remarkable similarities to medicine nowadays. Some of the diseases have changed and the treatments have evolved, but we still are faced with the disease and death, and the medical and scientific community are still striving to heal the sick and protect us all from ills. It makes me think that in 100 years' time, will a similar tour look upon what we do today with the wide-eyed wonder that we look back at the pioneers of the late 1800s? Will they raise an eyebrow at our practices and comment that they can't believe we used to do that? No doubt. But what we do today, building on the lessons of the past, will enable those future generations to continue to improve the health and well-being of the human race. We are all part of this same evolving tapestry of history, and whilst we might not all end up with our names in the history books or carved in a stone on an historic Edinburgh building, we should all be proud that we, by learning the art of medicine, have contributed to making the world a healthier place. And whilst it is frustrating to have our lives impacted by this pandemic, and not being able to travel to see our family and friends makes us feel alone and isolated, looking back at the history of medicine and where we have come from lets you appreciate that this too will pass, and medicine will emerge stronger and more knowledgeable, and humans will continue onwards and upwards. Different times, but the same story.